Recording in progress.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. Welcome, members of the Portfolio Committee for Transport and the members for Public Enterprises. This is a joint session of both Portfolio Committees, and the intention here is to get a presentation from the Transport in order to brief us and update us in relation to the issues around the transport rail processes. Our belief as the public enterprise is that we need to fast-track the process of building infrastructure for rail transport in order to relieve this congestion on the road, which is a major contributing factors is trucks that are transporting everything that is needed by our economy. Therefore, we would like to get that update from the Department of Transport, of course, with the other departments that are related to the issue, to help us to understand to what extent are we busy trying to offload this burden on the road that is consistently being damaged, of course, by overuse of these trucks on our road in order to build a good infrastructure that can be in a position to help the country to for low cost in the same time, because rail transport is much more economic viable as compared to road transport. Therefore, we would like to get from them as to what extent are we in a position to deal with this problem. I'm expecting to have here both ministers, Minister of Transport and the Ministry of Public Enterprises, any ministry that is here. We would like to give them perhaps 5 minutes, from both the departments to give a political overview from the Minister of Transport, if there is anybody from the Ministry of Transport.
From our side, both the Minister and the Deputy Minister are helping cabinet activities, so we are good to go.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Martin Gerge. And then, can we check with the public enterprises if there is any person from the ministry, either deputy or minister?
Chairperson?
Yes.
I have received the apology from both the minister and the deputy minister. The minister is in cabinet and the deputy minister is in Alexco. Alexco is in front of another portfolio committee.
Okay. No, it's fine, Jisang. Then without wasting time, let's get straight to the person. But I need to indicate that between myself and the chair, Honorable Zwane, we will be co-chairing this session. Therefore, my first part will be the presentation, and then thereafter we'll give over to him to take the engagement up to the end. However, would love, I've seen the presentation, it's a bit long, we'll have to stick to the time because members are also have to prepare for the sitting at the same time. While, of course, we have to exhaust the issues and the engage Tara on the input, but we must bear in time that this is not the only business of the day. We have all, we've got also other issues, including the important matter of the National Assembly, where we all expected to be there. Therefore, I will give the presenters an hour, maybe 55 to an hour or 50 to an hour to make their presentation. And then thereafter, we'll have another hour for the members to shoot their questions. And then thereafter, the response. Therefore, we have to be very efficient with the time. Therefore, let me, without wasting time, give over to the presenters to make their presentation, and I will be strict when I mean 50 to 55, I mean that. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Good morning to the Honorable Chair, Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Nwaku Makaipia. I'm the Acting Director General from the Department of Transport. And I'd like to thank the Honorable members for inviting us to the Portfolio Committee to be able to share with you how far are we moving in terms of implementation of movement from road to rail, and secondly, what are those challenges that we are facing within the rail infrastructure to implement this. I just want to check, Chair, is my presentation visible?
Until 12 midnight. I only slept up.
Yes, yes, it's visible. It's visible, Ngwako.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. The presentation, Chair, as it is a consolidated approach by government, considering that the role that we need to play the Department of Transport as a policy-making department and the regulatory framework, and with our department, Department of Public Enterprises, their role in terms of shareholder management on the Transnet side, and us working with PRASA. So the presentation will be divided in that angle where I'll lead part of the presentation from government, and then the implementing entities of government, namely PRASA, Transnet, will do the presentation on the implementation parameters led by the CEO, Ms. Poshia Devi, and then PRASA will then deal with the implementation issues and the challenges led by the acting group CEO, Mr. Mpilo. In terms of the presentation overview, we'll then cover what are the policy parameters and then the strategy on freight migration plan, what is the implementation agenda, and both from the state-owned entities, and what then becomes our role from government in terms of monitoring and evaluation, and reflect on some few issues in terms of implementation. We will try our level best, Chair, to stick to the time that has been given in really to be able to deal with these issues. At the high level, Chair and Honorable Members, dealing with the overview, we just want to demonstrate where do we come from in terms of the situation that we found ourselves in terms of the issues around what has caused rail in itself to have this shift towards road. We know that has been the result of the deregulation of roads. Transport in 1988, and that really made sure that the tracks flood the market, and obviously the challenges that we therefore faced made the intention that even those that are rail friendly cargo end up really being transported by the roads. And we know what are the challenges that we then face in terms of the tracks, the traffic congestion that we then have. A lot of incidents happening on our major highways, the issue of road damage, and the cost of building and repair of those roads. And now with the rain that we have seen in the country and challenges on road and the potholes, I think that just becomes another determining factors, both on the secondary and the primary rail network. And that has just really led to government to then say, how do we then create an enabling environment, one on the policy level and the strategies, to make sure that we then facilitate this movement from road to rail. And the presentation will really talk to these particular issues. And our state-owned entities, namely PRASA and Transnet, will then deal with the issues moving to the next level. Moving to the next slide, Chair. We thought it would be very critical that we therefore really talk to the key strategic inputs that we have put in terms of policy mandate, and that being the National Rail White Paper that has been recently being approved by Cabinet on the 23rd of March 2022, which we see as a critical milestone to take the sector forward, because the sector has operated for a very long time without a comprehensive rail policy. We therefore recognize that there have been work that has happened in that regard, but we believe the policy will then take us forward. And the minister has launched the policy in May, and the policy has been gazetted for implementation. And we have started a series of engagement with stakeholders in the rail sector in particular. And we have the first one that took place on the 2nd of June, which really focused and will be moving across the country in all provinces to have the policy stakeholder advocacy workshop to ensure that those that are responsible for implementation understand that the implementation elements that we need to deal with in terms of this policy. We, in terms of this specific presentation, Chair, we didn't cover all the policy in totality. We've really just looked at the policy statement that we believe they are key in assisting government with regard to the movement from road to rail. Moving to the next slide, Chair, the policy, we cover the policy vision and the thrust that cuts across. To say at a high level that the policy is a long-term vision to take the rail policy forward, and it therefore talks to the time horizon of 2050, which is then broken down in terms of various implementation timeframes, one being the short-term intervention, the medium-term intervention, and the long-term intervention, which goes towards the time of 2015. And the vision, Chair, is really to demonstrate and ensure that the rail plays its role as an affordable, competitive, and integrated, reliable, safe a mode of transport that becomes a backbone to the South African logistics, freight logistics and passenger mobility system. We then contribute towards the development of economic growth and the areas of social development within the country. And the key thrust in the policy seeks to then say, how do we then start to achieve that? And the key policy thrust of the policy are actually two of those, which is key. One is the rail sector investment to then say, how do we then, within the key strategic corridors of the country, that moves the key commodities and that contributes towards economic growth of the country, and that can assist government at a high level to address the challenges that it faces, being economic development, job creation, and the issue around sector harmful emissions, considering that transport is the biggest emitter. And to then ensure that investment itself, it is guided towards the key elements of rail being high speed, heavy haul, and heavy intermodal, so that we are able to remove the trucks and the containers from our road. And the second intervention, which really doesn't replace the primary one, but we see it as an enabling element, is the issue around institutional reposition, where we want to, as government, the policy says, let's allow third party access to be able to assist the state or the enterprises to exploit some of this rail addressable market to ensure that they applaud to that opportunity. And we believe that is a contribution towards helping government with regard to movement from rail to rail on the freight side. On the passenger side is how do we then ensure that the co-sanctioning of passenger and commuter is therefore introduced in that particular space to then say in areas where government cannot be able to run services, with PRASA being in that space, how do we ensure that we use the infrastructure that we then have to ensure private sector participation, considering that in all these models, infrastructure becomes a key asset that we believe as government must continuously own, even though we might invite private sector to play a role in terms of funding those elements. But any other model to be implemented will be in line with government being a strategic owner, and we'll be using our strategic owned entities to be an authority in that particular space. Moving into the next slide, Chair, we really talk to the objectives of the policy that the policy talks to, and key to then say how do we then hold and reverse the decline of the rail sector based on the challenges that we have. We know we have lost market share, especially in terms of our general freight business. And some of the programs that government does through our state entities will seek to achieve that. And key to the policy pillars, it is about how we then ensure a road to rail strategy, a movement across both the freight and the passenger corridors, and ensuring that we have strong institutional and regulatory frameworks to be able to ensure that we do that. And then a key among those which I'll then cover in terms of the implementation plan talks to how do we then legislate some of these key elements within the National Rail Bill, and secondly, creating a playing field with the Interim Rail Economic Regulator, and lately, obviously, with the maturity of the economic transport regulation through the bill that is currently in Parliament, and the National Rail Master Plan, which will then be identified within the key network, what are these key strategic freight and passenger corridors, so that when private sector comes and knocks, they are directed in terms of where exactly we are supposed to be able to deal with and ensure that there is a contribution towards a government delivery program. Moving to the next slide, in terms of our policy statement, at a high level that we have covered, we really talk to the rail infrastructure planning, which it is a function that was split across the state entities. And I think as government, as part of the pronouncement, this will be centralized at the national level. Key to us dealing with us, we just want to determine what is the strategic rail network planning to determine those corridors, and we therefore provide oversight. And state enterprises will in detail go and do their own planning in terms of the business planning and the implementation in how to achieve those key objectives. At a high level, the slide talks to what then becomes the role of the rail component that will establish as government, which will include the development of the National Rail Master Plan, how do we then undertake feasibility studies in the rail sector to ensure implementation, and working together with our state entity to make sure that we have funding strategies, how do we work together in terms of the investment program, obviously in consultation with the other role players, inclusive of logistics companies and private sector operators. And really in our process to ensure sustainability in terms of those that qualify and understand that they are able to satisfy both the rail safety operational requirement and secondly, the economic regulation aspect of that particular element. Moving to the next slide, we therefore reflect on the issue of the branch lines, which are key towards the revival of rural towns. And we have known that over years, based on the infrastructure challenge that we have had, those branch lines, some of them have been decommissioned. And we have really worked closely with the Department of Public Enterprises on how do we develop a strategy around these issues. And we have developed a matrix in terms of how we are going to identify those branch lines that we see as strategic and those that will really need a government subsidy with that. But I think one of the key game changers that government policy brings in this space is to then say, we know how branch lines were operating, were able to then only operate in that small space of from sidings to the areas of coordination where they'll be handed over to the main operator. Now, obviously, in line with the framework that will be put in place, they'll be able to access the core network from the point of origin to be able to deal with that. And we're saying as government, both with working with the railway safety regulator and working with the transport economic regulator in the interim, IREC will be able to help in that particular element. And the next slide really talks to how we have already moved in terms of doing preparatory work in anticipation of that policy, considering that it has taken almost a long time to be approved. Together with the DOT, we have concluded an implementation protocol where we have established a joint working team in terms of both department to ensure oversight in that particular level. There have been branch lines that have been identified, and we are finalizing the implementation plan to be able to deal with that. And working together with the DPE, Transnet is on board in terms of really an expert to be able to look at the viability issues and what will then be needed what will be the investment quantum that is needed to be able to deal with that. And we believe this is one of the key element of the policy and implementation, because the private sector has continuously knocked on our doors, being the agricultural sector in the fruit and export business, to then say, how do they work with government to be able to deal with that? We believe, obviously, with the issues that we have identified, this will be a key contributor in terms of that implementation of movement from road to rail. Moving to the next slide, we just demonstrate at a high level who are the role players in terms of the implementation protocol. The DOT and DPE working together there through the joint working group, and IREC playing an oversight role in terms of that. And those are the Transnet becoming an implementation and contracting authority in that element to be able to run the concession and the PSP aligned with the framework that government is developing, because the framework then identifies what are those key elements that the private sector needs to play in as part of the concession. Moving to the next slide, the slide talks to the rolling stock. We see this element because one of the key investments in our discussion with the private sector in policy is that government in itself, especially guiding the work that is done by both PRASA and Transnet, was investing in both below rail assets and above rail assets, which simply obviously talks to the issue of infrastructure, which is a track and station, and secondly, the issue of rolling stock. So we believe that this is an element that we want the private sector to play and bring investment in that. And we therefore support the establishment of a private sector rolling stock leasing companies. And we even in the same fold encourage the train operators and state-owned enterprises to be able to lease to any other party, including the new entrants that want to come in this space and we're emerging miners in that particular element. Moving to the next slide, the policy talks around the market and organization structure, which really talks about the issue of who will then consist and play a role in that particular space. We therefore talks to the infrastructure owners, infrastructure managers, and train operators. And that separation, we then say it can happen within vertically integrated entity. For example, looking at Transnet itself playing a role in terms of being an infrastructure owner and provider and being a train operator. But I think what is very important is that that should be on a condition of a clear accounting separation to be able to ensure that when you do your accounting in regard to your access charges, it is very clear of the amount of money that we are spending on infrastructure. But at the same time, we want to use those access charges that those who access our network pay to be funded back into the infrastructure in investment. And the last two bullets just talks to the regulatory framework that we'll be able to put in. The next slide talks to the issue around third-party access and how do we ensure that we ensure that those that want to access the network in various sectors of the economy are therefore allowed under the framework that will then be put, and both state-owned enterprises, which is PRASA and Transnet, because of their shared network, they must be able to establish a traffic management function control to deal with these issues within their infrastructure element. And then we are saying the access fees and terms for that should be published in the public domain to be able to ensure the transparency and the rules of the game. And we therefore saying as one of the policy elements, they must be able to publish a network statement so that we are able to then understand what are the access conditions, what is the capacity, so that as a government, we're able to exploit the capacity that we have within our rail network, obviously, so that when we start to even look at investing in superior gauges, including standard gauges in some of these things, we have made sure that whatever asset that we have as a country, we're able to sweat that. Moving into the next slide, we then talk to the third party access. It's just to really put an element of emphasis of the access coordination forum that will be established to deal with the issues and how to ensure that the slots that are allocated, we are able to then use them moving forward, considering that the Transnet plays in this particular space, and there are some slots that they've always been having, is how we then balance that availability of those slots and the usage with the new entrants that needs to come to the market. Can we then move to the next slide? The next slide at a high level talks to the issue of funding elements and where government wants to direct their efforts. We were saying we limit the funding contribution precisely towards the rail infrastructure and leave the operators that comes there in the space to be able to fund their own rolling stock in terms of the proceeds from operation. And we, working with government, will have to secure additional funding from other sources to ensure that we make this rail to work and augment the debt funding by a transparent balance sheet. And we know on the side of PRASA, we have really dealt with those particular issues in terms of passenger rail being social service that we continuously subsidize. And we therefore talk to the issue that I've talked to, that the access fees paid by operators will have to fund the infrastructure manager expenditure as another element. And we therefore obviously agree that the organs of state will fund the standard gauge high performance network when the right times come in terms of that, what will then be the key corridors that have been identified as part of the National Rail Master Plan and the prioritization that will be done by government. Can we then move to the next slide? The next slide talks to the policy pronouncement that we have made on the private sector participation framework, and we're going to package that through a framework that will be developed, which will be a framework on that, which will able to then demonstrate what is the clear, the different forms of participation in terms of model and the clear frame, procurement framework, the role of rail economic, and what really is the role of government playing in that space, because we therefore believe that will create a conducive environment of how both the major state-owned enterprises and the private sector will have to then work together with the private sector to deliver that mandate. Next slide. The next slide, coming slide, really talks to the issue that we want to deal with around the passenger element to be able to make sure that we deal with the issue of capacity. We know that in the space that PRASA plays, we really talk about the metro rail operation, but how do we then complement that with your urban guided transit where there's a need either for extension, and we therefore saying working together with the municipalities in that particular space with PRASA, we need to explore the other light rail system inclusive of monorails and trams in our cities, because we believe that the policies long-term provide a long-term vision. And in the implementation, we must be able to look at some of these packages in terms of passenger rail transport. Can we then move to the next slide? The next slide really talks to the high-speed rail, where government wants to play a role, and we are in the process of developing post the policy a high-speed rail framework, which will then provide the foundation on how do we then implement those particular elements. And there is criteria that will form part of those issues and then the strategy, the framework development process. And as the department, we're exploring the issue of a feasibility study, considering the nature of the rail project to ensure feasibility and the model of how we're going to fund it. Can we then move to the next slide? The next slide talks to the passenger rail reform I've talked to as part of the policy thrust, where government commits introducing concessioning in the passenger rail space. And obviously, we believe that must be implemented in consultation with our state-owned companies, because they are the authority and infrastructure owners in that particular element. And we believe that needs to be done in a way that it is integrated to support the movement from road to rail. Moving from the next slide, it really the next two slides talks to what then becomes the enabling instrument from a regulatory point of view. One, talking to the issues of economic regulation, and secondly, talking to the issue of structure, and to then say that in the interim, in what we want to introduce in terms of third-party access, which is the process that the Transnet has already gone to the market, and they'll talk to you on the slide. They are working closely with the Interim Rail Committee Regulatory Capacity, which is a structure which consists of the National Department of Transport, Department of Public Enterprises, and National Treasury, in how we then build capacity towards a fully-fledged economic regulatory implementation capacity moving forward. And next slide talks to the security intervention that we have pronounced in the policy, considering that the rail sector has been really attacked, and this really deals with our ability to be able to deliver service both from both passenger and freight. And when you get to both the PRASA presentation element and Transnet, they will be able to deal with that. But how we want to coordinate it at a high level is that as the Department of Transport, as a policy-making department, will engage with the Minister responsible for the Green Infrastructure Act, because we're not part of the Green Infrastructure Council, and we believe the rail infrastructure is one of those key elements that must form a part of that. We will establish a coordination forum, which will be a coordination of work of government between us as government, DPE, DOT, and the state-owned entities to ensure that work is good. There's work that is already happening in that space. Our entities are already working together, but just to then establish it at a high level, because there is an expectation of the us reporting at the JCPS clusters government, how are we winning this war of fighting in this particular space of criminals. Moving to the next slide, it really talks to that as a department, we will make sure that in consultation with all those that are involved, the operators play their own role in terms of security services in the rail setting. We know the challenges that they are facing, but how we then work with them and ensure partnership with other role players in that particular space. And we'll continue to engage with the South African Police Service, because we believe they can play a critical role of law enforcement, both on the fixed facilities, which is our critical infrastructure, which is a train station, and both in train there. And how do we then work together with the railway safety regulator to highlight in their state of safety report what are the key interventions and key areas that we need to implement and deal with in terms of implementation to ensure that we tamasly protect this infrastructure from vandalism, sex and sabotage, because we therefore believe it is a economic sabotage to government in terms of how we need to deliver our services. And there's another element of work and where we're working together with the DTI of how we really look at the industry of the scrap metal and look at the key interventions to be able to ensure that there is some limitations that are put across those elements. I think government will make pronouncement in the near future on those particular elements. So we believe that the key policy statement that we have presented seems to, in one way or another, respond in this white paper national rail policy to the key challenges that are faced by rail infrastructure and the implementation dynamics from our state-owned enterprise. And we believe it's implemented well with coordination across the board, we'll be able to deal with that. The next two slides, Chair, talks, and honorable members, talks to the implementation priorities which we have put aligned to the vision of the policy, the short-term intervention which we have given up to 2024, the rail policy which has been approved. We are now working on the National Rail Bill to ensure that we legislate some of these elements, accounting separation by TFR, which and work has already started in that particular element. The work on third party access have commenced. We look forward to implementation with the time frame. SOEs, both PRASA and Transnet, working on their network statements. How do we then prioritize our key corridors within the National Rail Master Plan and the issue of the devolution of commuter rail strategy being developed to be able to have clear coordination within other government and the metros and ensure that rail is integrated within the integrated transport plan. This is not really, it's not talking about taking PRASA and giving away to the municipality bodies at a high level. How we then integrated commuter rail services and ensure that rail commuter becomes the key backbone of moving our commuters and passengers within our metros and cities. The next slide really talks to where we see the next implementation framework we up to 2050 and how do we then finalize those projects that are within the National Rail Master Plan and concluding a business case for our first standard gauge pilot project and the funding element in terms of that implementation and the long-term objectives really how do we then look at the implementation of the policy thrust and its implementation and whether at that particular time we'll have really fully achieved the movement from road to rail in terms of both cargo and passengers. Moving into the next slide, Chair, which is the second element and the pillar of the department in terms of the strategic implementation, is really, Chair, to look at the strategic perspective to then say to the honorable members that the Department of Transport, before policy, one of the strategies that we have developed to really ensure this balance is the road freight strategy, which was approved by Cabinet in 2016. And it has been one of the key elements in terms of assisting government on how do we then move towards that. And the plan that was developed in this particular instance was the consultation of across multiple stakeholders, both in government and in the private sector, on how do we make sure that the rail-friendly cargo move towards that. And the key elements to intensify how we want to deliver on this as government, this element of movement of road to rail really forms part of our minister's delivery agreement within the current MTSF period. And we really want to deliver to that element. We therefore believe that even both Transnet, it makes a bigger contribution towards this implementation of the. In the next slide, we talk about at a high level, just to take honorable members, what were the objectives of this road freight strategy? Because for us, it was to then say within the land transport surface, how do we then make sure that there is equitable share and we then balance the issue of deregulation that we have talked about in the previous slides? And how do we then propose an effective road-to-road split, which in the next slide we'll then talk to, and how we then put one effective regulation and enforcement and quality standard to ensure that road freight operators operate within that particular space. But key to then say, as government, even when we want to bring regulation, let's ensure that we don't obviously kill the industry, but those who are implementers in that particular space are ready, especially how we then ramp the investment on the Transnet side. And I think the element of the key third party access becomes a solution in terms of that regard. The next slide, Chair, talks to really just setting the scene, to then demonstrate to the committee, joint committees, to then say, in terms of the road split and what is currently moving, and what we want to move moving forward, is that the split is around 87-13 in terms of the land transport volume, and that it is measured in terms of your million tons per kilometer per annum, which is then being transported. And the slide, if you look down there, just demonstrate the bulk commodities which are on rail, which is your export coal, export iron ore, and other minerals, steel and cement, which move in that particular space. But our key effort is to really to look at the bar, which is on the red side, which is where the key focus of movement from rail really needs to happen in that particular space, which is really looking at your agricultural products and some of those fuel and chemicals, which are, we believe, are rail-friendly cargo and are supposed to be on rail and are rail-friendly cargo commodities. Can we then move to the next slide? Which the next slide demonstrates, based on the data that we have, which is the recent data which we have, of really what then in our analysis, what moves annually. And the slide, even though it's not clear, but it then shows, demonstrate the issues around the point of origin in terms of the destination and what is used in that particular most of transport, and how we then target those particular elements moving forward. And the next slide is a demonstration of our rail corridors in the country in terms of the annual tonnages, road freight corridors, and where are the location in that regard. And it shows the major towns in terms of the original destination and the border post in terms of what we then facilitate in terms of our regional integration. Next slide. And the next slide, Chair and Honorable Members, just demonstrated the high level. How do we then see and the targeted tonnages from movement from road to rail? And those are the commodities and estimated tons per annum, which we believe are rail friendly and that can move. And on the element in terms of where we have targeted, we have already had engagement with the sector, and those sectors that are keen in terms of really migrating in elements around your commodities in terms of steel, timber, grain, pulp and paper, and oil and fuels. And those are the engagement as government that we have really engaged in that regard. I'll then move into the next slide, Chair, and over to the Group CEO of Transnet Freight Rail, Ms. Debbie, to then deal with those particular issues, and then followed by Transnet, and then I'll then wrap up moving forward. Thanks, Chair.
For you, Chair, there are some updates on the Transnet section. If we could have anyone nominated by the Group CE to host. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Tigan Lebu.
Yes, Chair, I was kindly requesting that we give to somebody else hosting rights, because there are some updates on the Transnet section.
Okay, you mean that you must have somebody from Transnet to quickly come in?
Yes, to if maybe the CEO can give us an indication who we should make the co-host to flood that part.
Okay, can they do that, please?
Yes, are you guys? Good morning, honorable members.
Yes, good morning.
Hi,
yeah.
Are you slicing the presentation, please, guys? We're on a short time.
There's no hosting rights given. Lebohang, please.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and Honourable Chair, I will start the presentation because it's a minor change that was added. So that was made. So Chair, following up on the presentation that was being made by the Department of Transport, I'm going to live in hope that the presentation is going to come up soon.
Can we see the face, Chair, of the presenter as stipulated by the rules of the meeting?
Yeah, you're right.
The photo, they can't see me.
Yeah, we would love to see because
sorry,
we
Chair.
Are...
Oh, yeah, no. Sorry, Chair, we had... I didn't...
so much.
So thank you, Chair. Honourable Members, can I go forward? I'm a bit... okay, it seems to be finally coming up. So our Honourable Members, is our presentation basically follows up on the Department of Transport's presentation and sort of focuses on the performance of rail. And I'm mindful of the time that we were given, Chair, so I really am going to go quite fast. Can you please put it on slide mode? It's not on slide mode. First of all, and I think possibly the most important, and I think it's referred actually to in the white paper, in the draft national white paper on rail that the Department of Transport is working on. There has been a significant underinvestment in rail in South Africa over the years. And in fact, the core decision that gets made is in 1986. As a result of the de Villiers Commission, which basically advocated quite strongly for the sweating of the assets rather and deregulated road, and fundamentally led to the situation that we have today. There's a later slide where we will show the gap that's created. This slide just indicates the number of trucks that have moved off road that has led to the tonnages that have moved on rail. However, there definitely are continuing constraints. Excuse me, sorry, can somebody put it on presentation mode, please? The issues that remain are the state of infrastructure investment, as I've indicated, Honourable Members. Number two, the availability of locomotives. There's another slide which will more starkly indicate the significant undersupply. And then lastly, the real serious challenge that we have with security incidents. In fact, if I may be bold to say so, and I think our presentation makes the point, is that if you solved one core problem, and this was the issue of security, you would have broken fundamentally the back of a disadvantage that currently exists between rail and road. So on this, hello, what's going on? Can you please go back to the previous slide? Can you go back to the previous slide? Thank you. If you look at this heat map, and that's the... Oh, geez. Can you go to slide 36, please? If you look at this slide, which will come up, if you... The heat map... it shows just how extensive the security incidents are. In particular, which is of grave concern, at least in as far as it relates to this topic of moving traffic from road to rail, the biggest impact is on the container corridor. And what you'll see is that over the last couple of years, I mean, 2015, we lost just over 128 kilometers of cable as a result of theft. By 2021, we were losing over 1,500 kilometers of cable, which we have to replace ourselves. So far, and if you look at the graph in the middle, Honourable Members, you'll see that the impact on operations has been a loss of revenue of 2.1 billion rand. The security costs have gone up significantly in Transnet over the years, and you can see that in the middle block, the pinkish to red color, where we increased from over $1 billion in 2018 to $1.5 billion by 2022. In fact, if you look at our budget as Transnet, inclusive of the budget that we set aside for security of the pipeline, we are spending close on 2.5 billion rand on security. And then lastly, as I've indicated, is the impact, which is the 459, that's remediation. Now, the remediation is when we are replacing the cables and all pieces of equipment that gets lost as a result of the cable theft. This 459, we claim back from no one. We are not insured for it, and so basically it comes directly from our balance sheet as Transnet. If you go to the next slide. So as with, next slide, please. If you look at the argument, the core argument that we're making on this one, is that in truth, for containers, because this is manufacturing volumes that we would be moving from road to issues, they tend to be small consignments, and smaller consignments basically mean I'm not looking for a 100-train wagon. I may be looking for a 20-train wagon. You then also have the additional requirement that the volumes and the cargo have to be consolidated at a particular point. The highest contribution to service disruption on this system is theft and vandalism by far. If we were able to deal with this, we would at least start resolving one of the key issues, is that the running time, the design running time of a train from Gauteng to the port in Ethekwini in Durban, at the port of Durban, is 18 hours. But more often than not, we end up running the train over 36 hours. Now, no exporter can be able to take such a service, which is so variable. And yet road, the transit time is 8 to 10 hours from Gauteng to Durban. So it's an issue that we absolutely need to deal with. Now, for customers as well, whenever we don't make the time, because more of the idea in logistics, if you're efficient, is that by the time the container arrives at the port, you need to have a nominated vessel. If you miss the nominated vessel and there's a short shipment of one sort or the other, this has an additional cost on exporting from South Africa, and it costs anything about $2,000 a container as a result of short shipment. So the big issue that we're saying here is that dealing with theft would significantly improve the reliability of rail, especially on this corridor. It's a big concern. If you look at the graph on the right-hand side, the market outlook, this is data that we get from BER, the Bureau of Economic Research, is that if you look at the outlook actually in terms of performance for autos, containers generally tends to represent manufacturing as well as agriculture right at the bottom, are actually exceptional because for all of them are above 4%. And so it is crucial that we find ways to efficiently and cost effectively move these volumes. If you can go to the next slide, please. So on the next slide, that's where we also represent this issue of fleet availability. I'm still waiting for the next slide. Of fleet availability and the impact, the locals, and the impact that it's had on our ability to move volumes. If you look at 2017-18, that's when we were able to move 226 million tons on the rail system. And you look at the difference between 21-22. The most important point that we're making here is that in 17-18, the total number of locals that we had available were 2,215. By 2021, 21-22, we only had 1,656. Now, it is a material impact in the volumes that you are able to move. Now, many people, to a large extent, yeah, it's true. We're responsible by virtue of the fact that we have the review application, which is related to state capture. But we're doing everything to make sure that we move as fast as we possibly can towards a settlement of this issue. And the point is, if once we're able to solve this problem, we would have dealt with the second key constraint, which is local availability to be able to move traffic. Now, to be honest, The local availability shortage is not the biggest problem on the container corridor. It's a problem much more on the heavy ore lines. If you look at the graph on the right-hand side, we then look at, ties up with the point that I was making about the De Villiers Commission in 1986 and the significant backlog that we have in infrastructure maintenance. If you look at the green in 1718, we required 5.4 billion rand to invest in maintenance of the track itself, of the system itself, that track, that signaling, and all of the supporting infrastructure that they require. In that year, we were only able to allocate 2.4, and fortuitously, Transnet was able to spend the 2.4 billion that was made as an allocation, and we had a shortfall of 3 billion. Over time, the amount that we require for track maintenance has increased to 8.3, and that was last year's requirement, which was 8.3 billion rand. We were able to make an allocation of 2.3. 2.1 went to track, and basically what we did do in that year was to take a top slice of about 1 billion rand that we reallocated towards local maintenance, because as we've also indicated, in the local side, as a result of the fact that we're struggling to get parts in particular from our Chinese partners, there's a lot more money that has gone towards reverse engineering and figuring out how we might be able to start maintaining and finding, investing in new parts that we might be able to replace, such as the compressors itself. But the backlog by the end of the year is 6 billion. All this says is that the backlog continues to grow, and we need to get to a point where we're able to meet the funding requirements, and must say that the national white paper is really useful in finally making a very clear statement about the need for government to make investment in infrastructure. Can we go to the next slide, please? Now, one of the things that we've proposed, which is also reflected in discussions that we've had with the Department of Transport, is that going forward, we reclassify the network in South Africa into a category A, B, and C. Now, category A would be the heavy haul lines, both the, and fundamentally most of the lines that move the resources, that would be iron ore, the Northeast Corridor that moves coal going forward. And then the second category would be the one that moves general freight, and axle loads are around 20-ton axle loads on the system. This is fundamentally the green on the system. And then category C would be the branch lines. Now, the previous branch line strategy was one where Transnet concessioned the branch line unmaintained. What we're now saying is that we will maintain the system directly ourselves, and I think this should then finally lead to a situation where the branch line concessionaires are able to run the system and only focus on the costs of the operations directly themselves, which would be rolling stock and then the regular maintenance. But the big maintenance would be the responsibility of Transnet. This categorization also is very important in as far as starting to categorize, I suppose, will segment the funding that we require for track maintenance, because the A system would have to meet a particular requirement. So that is in the process of being negotiated with RSR, so that we maintain it at a particular level. Now, it's particularly important going forward because it means that Transnet, in its allocation of investment for maintenance, is going to be governed by the rail safety regulator, number one, and number two, is governed by the categories of the rail going forward. What is crucial in rail is the user pay principles. However, as a result, and user pay, it would normally be you pay for the operations and you pay for the regular maintenance. You don't pay for significant infrastructure upgrades and additions to the system. The way that the underfunding that effectively has occurred and the decision to quit the assets that took place over the years has meant, can you please move to the next slide, has basically meant that as Transnet, we've had to depend on the partnerships with the private sector. Now, there are consequences for those decisions that you make. And we can see it. And I think you would be able to see it in the media, and honorable members would basically know that there's a constant cry from, in particular, emerging miners who are trying to get access to the system. The consequence has been that we then have to approach the users of the system to help us with the funding whenever there's a significant addition or upgrade that has to happen in the system. The impact of that is that we are constantly having to answer to the Competition Commission, because if somebody helps you to fund the infra, they're either going to get a pricing benefit or they're going to have a benefit of having a longer contract. Both, one has the impact of uncompetitive pricing. The second one has the impact of closing out the system to new entrants. It absolutely has to change if we're going to be able to create a genuinely inclusive economy. And frankly, if we're going to be able to take advantage of the huge opportunity that we have available in South Africa, which we currently are just not able to pick up on. Chair, I'm just going towards the last couple of slides, but this reflects actually quite a concerted effort on our side to see an increase in the volumes on rail. We have significant partnerships that we've undertaken, and these partnerships are to help grow the volumes. Because if you recall, one of the points that I made is that in this, especially on the container corridor where you're moving agriculture, manufacturers, and autos, you do need to have consolidation. And the best consolidators we have in South Africa are all of these companies where we're looking at how we might increase the cargo movements by the various entities. You see that there's LPG opportunities and liquid fuels as well that we're looking to move on the system. If you can move to the next slide, please. We also have other initiatives, partnership initiatives, where we're collaborating on the autos with DTIC, DPE, and the IDC, where we're looking to move Ford's volumes through the port of Port Elizabeth. That requires expansion in the capacity on the line to Gqeberha directly. Manganese, we're working with the private sector as well in part, and it's one of those areas where we have to have a delicate balance between wanting the users, who you need to tie up into ensuring that an investment is fully optimized, but also on the other hand, we need to expand the capacity on rail so that we can be able to move more volumes of manganese. Same can be said on the other commodities. I'm just mindful of the time. If we could move to the next slide, please. And when it comes to the sidings, what we've been looking at, I don't know what happened. When it comes to the, I absolutely do not understand. Sorry, Chair, I'm going to try and not be distracted by this. When it comes to the issue of sidings, partnering on sidings, our core focus on sidings now is to ensure that whenever we partner with anyone on the sidings, the intent is to ensure that there's improved efficiency in the logistics service and that we are moving additional volumes on rail. So a couple of targeted areas I've indicated, LPG, containers, fuel and petroleum products, sidings where we're looking at consolidating mining commodities as well, and just agriculture, sidings where we are targeting agriculture products. If you go to the next slide, please. This slide, Chair, then next slide, please. The next slide basically is around third-party access. About third-party access. When we came out in April with the announcement about proceeding on slot access, the idea was that by the beginning of next year, we would be able to have third parties operating, in particular on the container corridor, as well as out to East London, because we had excess capacity. We had slots that were available on that. Now, even on the container corridor, we only had 6 slots given the issues that we've already reflected on the state of infrastructure. Unfortunately, with the flooding, had a direct impact on KZN, especially from Ashburton out to the port in terms of the line. There's significant work that needs to be done, undertaken as far as that's concerned. And unfortunately, that means that the process of adding third parties has now gone a little bit slower, but we remain quite committed that as soon as is practicable, we will be bringing in third parties onto this. Crucial for us as Transnet as well, because it means that we get additional revenue. Number one. Number two, in the Eastern Cape, when it was flooding in KZN, there was actually significant rains. So where we had 10 slots available up to the port of East London in Buffalo City, we unfortunately suffered quite a significant amount of damage as a result of water. And so there's quite significant fixes that we were doing there. So that meant that we couldn't, in a sense, decouple the two processes and run faster with East London whilst we sort out the tracks. We basically had to actually undertake quite significant investment on the other. The benefits are real as far as we're concerned, and I think Didi Jingwako has already indicated some of actually the additional investments, can you go to the next slide, that arise as a result of this third-party access. And it's really about building a very rich ecosystem, economic ecosystem around rail, where first of all, there are opportunities for third-party rolling stock leasing companies that would become available. Now, there are clearly other questions that this third-party access raises, and we've already started talking to the DTIC around this, and I imagine that would be raised with DOT, is that in terms of the benefit that the government would have had previously by being able to have, and it's a benefit in driving localization and industrialization by having one single procuring entity that was buying locals. Now, effectively, the only entities that are compelled to localize is ourselves, the state-owned enterprises, Transnet, Prasa, and the Gautrain, where we have to buy local, and we will continue to do that exactly. But what we've been indicating is that there is a definite fragmentation on the supply chain and in terms of the volumes that we then would be buying by having third-party access. But our hope is that in the way that we industrialize going forward, where we would be targeting all of the fast moving parts and components that we require on a regular basis for maintenance would be manufactured locally. In the same way as we have requirements for easily available consignment stock, the private sector would have the same. So our hope is that also as we standardize, the private sector would also be able to procure on this side. Chair, if I may, Honourable Chairperson, I'd like to stop at this point, and then we let Prasa continue the presentation. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present.
Thank you, CEO. Much appreciated. Is there anyone else? I thought this was the last presentation.
Chair, the last part is on the Prasa element because the implementation happens twofold. Can we know we have gone beyond your time, but we'll hand over to the group CEO Ntatempelo to just deal with the key issues.
Okay. What's our Bambino?
Good morning, Chair, to you, honorable members, acting DGs, government officials and colleagues. I'll run through the presentation quite quickly and try not to repeat what our sister SOE have highlighted, issues of security, issues of funding. I may just maybe highlight a few specific points in that area. But road to rail in passenger rail, just to give a context quite quickly, if you look at a 10-year window from 2009, in the metro space, we deteriorated from 646 million to 147 million. In the long distance, we deteriorated from 3 million to 276,000, just over 276,000. So that's the picture. So when we talk about road to rail, it's also taking the passengers back into the rail environment. And we're looking at rebuilding and also recovering the infrastructure, which primarily was actually destroyed during a gap that was created when we cancelled security contracts and also during COVID as well. And there's another problem that relates into the funding space, which is the maintenance part. So I'll highlight a few of those points as we go. But the primary point is the rebuilding and the recovery of the infrastructure, which then talks to creating space for access into each other's network and also opening that up for the envisaged third-party access by third-party operators that the rail policy talks to. Next slide, please. So I'm going to dive quickly into the recovery of the corridors that we have. Next slide, please. So we currently have got 40 corridors slash lines, and 18 of which are functional. And I would highlight that this is before the floods in KZN, because since then we've had to shut down the three corridors that were functional in KZN. So that has taken a life of its own. So we've got majority of our corridors in Gauteng, and 7 functional, 9 in KZN, 3 functional before floods, but now no. I think we've just reintroduced trains in 2 of those corridors, 2 in Eastern Cape using diesel traction, and there we're accessing Transnet network, and then 12 in the Western Cape, 6 functional, and I think we're accessing the Transnet infrastructure there. In the north of that environment. Next slide, please. So if you look at the potential where we are today, and you compare that to where we were when I stated the problem in terms of where we depleted from, we need to accelerate the service recovery so we get back from this 147 that I'm talking about to 646. We need to accelerate that and also collaborate a lot more better. And I need to highlight this quite quickly. I think before, there was a time when the collaboration between ourselves and our sister company were maybe not as well oiled as it should be. But that has improved in the last couple of months. We're collaborating a lot better. We're managing traffic a lot better, but it's not 100%, and that's something that we need to do to open up for this road to rail, and also making sure that the rail policy itself is implementable. So getting closer in terms of train traffic control, and also the interface agreement itself, and managing the utilization and basically prioritization between passenger and freight. Next slide, please. So our quickest way to recover this, we've looked at this and we said, let's recover the limited service, get the infrastructure back online. We can then get into the increasing the frequencies when we introduce the automation and the digitization of and the modernization of our infrastructure as well as we go forward, which then increases the frequency of the trips and also the number of passengers that we carry as well. And that on its own, when we open up for usage for both freight and passengers, will then increase the volumes that we're going to carry, because there's a lot more automation and also frequencies and also usage of our lines. Next slide, please. In terms of where we're starting to increase these volumes back to 646, we've chosen the most critical corridors. We call them the 10 priority corridors, and this is where majority of our passengers come from. You've heard the president announce this in the SONA. One is Mabopane, which is currently running. We've got Salisbury, which is currently running in Gauteng. And we've got 4 lines that we've just shut down at the moment for recovery purposes. And we're looking at bringing them around September this year. In the Western Cape, as I highlighted earlier on, we've got 12, but we've recovered the following lines. So in the south, we've got 2 lines running. In the north, we've got two lines running. We have Central Line, which is currently only running up to Langa. We need to recover that in phase one form, where Cape Town to Bellville becomes the priority, which we're looking at bringing back in July. And then phase two is the Nyanga to Captain's Cliff, and also Nyanga to Chris Hani, which is in progress. And we're looking at bringing that back in December 2022. KZN has taken a life of its own because of the disaster. So we've introduced diesel traction in the north, which was less affected by the floods. So cleanup of debris and mudslides and all those things has been done. So we're running diesel traction there. and then a shuttle in the middle between Durban and Meerbank, just to carry and make sure that there is transport for the people in there. But primarily, this is where KZN is going, and these are the corridors that we're focusing on that will help us bring the numbers back. Next slide, please. So a highlight out of this is that we need to bring in the modernization as well. In as much as we're going to start by bringing the infrastructure, which brings less number of trips, basically, which then impacts on the number of passengers. When we modernize and bring signaling into the picture, we automate the train protection and also move away from manual authorization. We then introduce more frequencies and also usage out of that, which impacts on the access itself. Next slide, please. In terms of the challenges that we have, as I highlighted, we've got security. I'm not going to dive much because I think CEO of Transnet has highlighted the security impact in there. The one thing that I'll highlight quite quickly is that the CEO of Transnet talks about 36 hours for freight. You can imagine what that means in terms of passengers. We end up having to intervene in certain cases where we push buses because the time to move the trains or to the time that the passengers have been in trains is far too long. So that's the security impact at the moment and the challenge that we have. It then pushes us to then fund that accordingly. It pushes us to collaborate a lot closer when it comes to that as we transverse each other's network. I'm not gonna dive into the rest of that in the interest of time. Next slide, please. So this we've highlighted next slide, please. What are we doing in terms of the security space? I think this slide talks about the improvement in terms of the introduction of our integrated security plan. You can see where the status, next slide, please, where you've got the graphs. You can see the graphs are showing you that we since the introduction of that, we're now taking control of that environment. All is not so well. We're still getting attacked a number of times in the corridors. The thieves are out there. The syndicates are out there. The vandalists are still out there. So as we recover, we're also increasing the coverage in our space. Just to highlight to members, at the peak, PRASA had around 10,000 boots on the ground. When we cancelled the security contracts, we took that number down to 2,000. As of last year, we quickly had to come back and reintroduce the boots on the ground before the technology, which then introduced the 3,100 boots on the ground that we talk about. So that was just to arrest the system, and we're now ramping that up as we go, and it's tied to our recovery strategy that I showed you. So each corridor that we recover, we put security and we ramp it up accordingly. And the proof point on that is that since we opened Mabopane, we've not had a single incident in that environment. But you can see the numbers show there. Next slide, please. So we've got another challenge of encroachment. In Mabopane, we've dealt with that together with the city of Tshwane. Central Line has taken, again, a life of its own. We've got three encroachments on that line. One is the Langa section, the other one is the Philippi section, and the other one is the Kailicha section. So we have to collaborate as entities of government in the movement of those people so that we can then put trains back on those tracks. So we are collaborating with the department, public works, human settlements through HDA and the city in there. So we have to work on this a lot harder so that we bring that line back. It's taking a little bit longer because of the statutory requirements that are there for us to go over before we move the people. Next slide, please. So partnership, let me not dwell much onto that. We do need to work together with Transnet, with Eskom. So we've got joint operations in that space as well, joint monitoring as well. And the department is helping us and it's with us through that. One of the cases that you can see there is theft that's been instigated through our own internal stuff, but as you can see, we're winning the fight. We're cleaning up from inside out as well, and the courts are helping because we now have got convictions on this. Next slide. So one emphasis on the security side is that as we recover this infrastructure, we then need to fund it accordingly. And I think the rail policy has opened that up to look at both the maintenance of the infrastructure and also the protection thereof. As it is, our budget shows us that we require R1 billion every year to protect our infrastructure. Next slide. On the funding side, I'm going to run quickly onto that. Next slide. Next slide. Just a highlight. Next slide, please. So we've got the mainline passenger services, which is a problem on its own. It relies pretty much on the Transnet infrastructure. As I said, we're working closely to make sure that this is recovered as well. As I said again, the attacks on that network then means an attack on our service as well. So closer collaboration on that, and the quicker we deal with this, the better in terms of transporting passengers as well. The benefit on the freight in terms of getting this right is the benefit on the passengers as well. Next slide, please. I'll highlight the Transnet debt. Yeah, this slide here. So there are one-offs that we need to get into that are constraining the operations within PRASA, more so that we were impacted by COVID. And we also have got long-term debts. That's coming a long way. So we do need around 7 billion, and we're working with the department and treasury on this. We're submitting to treasury to get funding to get us out of this. Transnet debt, I think we've spoken about this out there. It used to sit at 2.4 billion. It's now we've agreed to get into 1.5 billion. We're working with the department and Transnet to go to treasury together so that we can then get that one out of the way. Security, as I highlighted, is around R1 billion. And then other creditors, if we sort that out, 1.7 billion, it should free us so that we can then run our operations and also maintain our environmental infrastructure accordingly. Let me stop here, Chair, in the interest of time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, CEO. Honorable members, I need to apologize for being too understanding, because I think I had to abandon my first strict rules of 5 to 11. Now the only, because the presentation was very long, especially the first one, the only thing that we can do now is to give over to my co-chair, Honorable Zwane, to take his part. Thank you for your patience. Honorable Zwane.
Co-chair, thank you very much. I enjoyed myself listening to the presentations, and thank you for chairing that session. colleagues, I think I read also that some colleagues were saying they only got some of the presentations around 9 o'clock. And so it is what it is. Let's try and ask questions that we grappled with during the presentations. Thank you to the three presentations, two by the Department of Transport and one by Public Enterprise. Mine is to entertain hands and ask the presenters to be readily available for answering the questions as brief to the point as they can. I have Honorable Khalip Kachalia. I have Honorable McDonald. I have Honorable Hunsinger. Those are the three hands that I see in that order, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Co-Chair. Chair, while we have been listening to the various presentations and presented with presentations, plans, wish lists, protocols, frameworks, I'd like to bring to the attention of members and the presentees the following. The IMF has just completed a visit yesterday to South Africa. And I quote, they said South Africa should be benefiting from a commodity price boom. Instead, it is frozen in a low quality climate due to slow reform and policy integration and implementation from government and persistent problems with SOEs. It goes on to say that there remains a large gap between encouraging policy statements and reform implementation, which undermines the confidence and growth impact of these statements. The operations, it says, finances and governments of ESCOM and Transnet need to be improved decisively and quickly. Now, I'm afraid I don't see this necessarily. Now, I'm not going to. I'm not going to talk necessarily to Prasa because that my colleagues will do that. That doesn't fall within my remit. And apart from the CEO of Transnet, who actually provided us with some data, the rest was largely data free, and over many many slides rushed through and presented. As you said, it is what it is, but it only came this morning. So it's not necessarily satisfactory. The fact is that the situation is hampered by the state in its appalling, inability to provide security, law and order, in terms of cable theft, sabotage, and the like. But, you know, both the presentation and the research document that we were provided with continues to advocate a greater role for the state in transport, where this can be provided in large measure or supplemented by the private sector. Now, that needs to be addressed. In terms rail to road, industry players are asking, and they ask me regularly, they say, can we have proof of the volumes that have been shifted from or that are claimed to have been shifted from road to rail, because they're uncertain of those figures. They also say, and I have to concur to a degree, that it is arrogant to say that there are that there are inefficiencies in private transport when the state provision of transport has been, let's be frank here, a case study in inefficiency. Competition is required to combat inefficiency. And that means that we need to stop the subsidies of certain transport routes with profits from monopoly harbors, for example. Rail, is not... We have to otherwise competition means nothing. Secondly, it's common cause that container to road corridors lost over R1 billion in 2019, and the losses. It's common cause that the losses that we've suffered, that both the fiscus and industry players have suffered in terms of the losing out on the commodity boom goes into many billions of rands. This is unacceptable. So we need to address that in terms of competition. So there's three issues really: cable and track losses, and security that needs addressing. Secondly, the level playing field in terms of subsidies and proper competition that's required. And thirdly, if the private sector is to be accommodated, and I'm appreciated that the CEO of Transnet spoke to this, that they cannot bear the risk and cost of failing track and cable security and the like, in all honesty. Now, and if Transnet is going to take that on and allow the concessionaires, if you like, to do their business, where is the money going to come from for that to ensure that that's in place? And is it going to come from subsidies? Because that goes back to my original question, is that then that corrupts the playing field? So I wonder if these questions can be addressed. Thank you very much.
Honorable Khalid Kachalia, thank you very much. Let's move to Honorable McDonald.
Thank you, Chairperson of both the portfolio committees. Thank you to the, all the officials from both departments. Chairperson, in the growth, the road to rail strategy, it's said that the rail must be affordable, competitive, effective, integrated, reliable, and safe. Now, if we had to put that as tick boxes, we are failing everywhere. It's definitely not affordable. I'll get to that. It's definitely not competitive. It's definitely not reliable, and it's definitely not safe. Chairperson, as much as what everybody is trying to say about that it happened in the last couple of years, it's been a 20-year regression in Transnet, a 20-year regression in Prasa. You go into the railway lines on the main line between Cape Town and Johannesburg, and you find all these small stations that used to have a station master and a little house, and that those houses are all broken down, dilapidated, all gone. And that's part of bad management. We've allowed ourselves to let go of the rail system by not implementing things. We take away the railway with police, and we don't replace it. We replace it by third party, and then when we have a problem with tenders, we remove them and allow the infrastructure to be completely destroyed. There's still questions on why. What was the thinking on removing all the security on Prasa parts, and that also affects Transnet, because at the end of the day, the two are reliant on each other on many parts of the rail system. And that leads me to another point. Why do we have a fragmented rail system? Rail is rail. We should, Transnet and Prasa should be combined as one entity, so that you don't have this issue that this is my railway line, this is my electrical wire, you can't touch this, you must pay me for this, I'll invoice you for that. And at the end of the day, everybody doesn't know and everybody owes everybody else, and it's a mess. We need to combine these two entities and bring back the railway police, make government infrastructure and a state-owned enterprises infrastructure a national key point, so that you can go to jail for destruction. And all I hear is that locomotives this and locomotives that, and we need $5 billion for that. But there's no plan on fixing things. Chairperson, currently in Bloemfontein, there used to be 14 people working with the handling of grain at Transnet. 14 people in one office. Today, in that same office, there's only 3 people working in that same office. The trains have reduced by 80%. The costs have gone up by 80%. It's more expensive to transport grain by rail than it is to transport grain by truck. And you know how I know that, Chairperson? It's because I've got a family member working in the Transnet system, and I know how much it costs to move grain at the moment. It's also more expensive to move fuel from Durban to Johannesburg via the pipeline than it is to move it by the truck. That's why all these trucks are on the road, moving fuel from Durban to Johannesburg, to Gauteng, which is the lifeblood of the economy, and we don't seem to see anything wrong with that. Chairperson, we need proper security. We need to rethink our the way we do business. We need to combine Transnet and Prasa. And Chairperson, the question I want for Prasa, how many actual security guards have you employed since you have announced the 3,000 people that were employed? Because last time we did an oversight, the figures did not match. It was 783 where there was an announcement that it was 3,000. I want to know the actual figures of security guards currently at Prasa. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable McDonald. Honorable Kunsinga.
Thank you, Chairperson. To the co-chairs, Chairperson Magatwa and Zwane, thank you also to all the presenters then from the delegation of Transnet and PASA. Certainly, Chair people, we've heard all the right words. Once again, I might add, because I've been exposed to so many strategic plans and turnaround strategies, but action is what is needed now. And we need action. We need to get grip on theft and vandalism in particular. And we finally need to get proper implementation. We've also had a lot of words, growing backlogs, fragmentation, challenges. A new one was triple challenge, deterioration, long-term debts, disasters. These were all imported to probably bring a perspective, but the conditions have really not changed a lot, you know, for the reason to drive a road to a rail program. It could have happened. You know, the 300,000 trucks that we currently have on the road came about because of the reluctance to drive a road-to-rail program. Therefore, the 300,000 trucks stepped forward and took the gap because there was a marketing gap. There was a need gap which these trucks simply took. Before 2020, in other words, before the growing backlogs and fragmentation and challenges and disasters and COVID-19, before 2020, in the past 10 years before then, there was a 40% growth in container activity in the Durban Harbour. We, Transnet, secured 12% of that market. So the main problem has always been and still is, in my view, this very ridiculous separation of ownership between Transnet and Prasa. This, while everything belongs to the state. Added to this annual cross-invoicing of about 1 billion rand that gets cross-invoiced between the two entities. It was important in this conversation about road to rail to also hear about metro rail and passengers and transport, simply because many of the passenger transport stations are in between Transnet stations. Prasa owns 317 stations of the 585, but metro rail operates on 468 of these stations. So therefore, again, cross invoicing. It must be paid and leased and hired from Transnet. Prasa uses 3,180 kilometers of rail, but it only owns 2,228 kilometers. So the balance is owed by Transnet and it needs to be paid for. And now we hear that there is a round about 2 billion rand owed in this very funny business relationship to Transnet. And suddenly everything must stop in terms of implementation because this ridiculous cross-invoicing system and payment between the two entities must be sorted out. While all the assets belong to the state. And that is why I call it ridiculous and funny, because it flaws implementation and it flaws operations and the economy and passengers and commuters has to pay for that. So there are obvious flaws in the system. While legislation regulated the separation between freight transport and passenger transport, the blue train is all about passengers, people, yet it falls under Transnet. If you as a private person would want to transport your private vehicle intercity, you wouldn't have to phone Transnet because they have huge vehicle carrier systems. You will have to phone Prasa, Shosa, Lozama to get your private vehicle transported intercity. This just goes to show that it does not work, and practicalities determine how it should best work, and it should best work by getting the two entities together. We also didn't hear a lot about the very important element within the effort to get road freight to rail, the planning around terminals, because terminals are integral in this distribution network and the realignment of a integrated distribution network between main roads, but also between harbors and also terminals. And we heard very little around that. Also the integration of particular commodities, raw materials, that should be part of the whole planning and the whole mix. And terminals play a big part in this. Overseas, for instance, we have a post office at every station and a lot of packaging and parcels at a high profit rate is distributed along with passengers in particular compartments. Chairperson, I want to end off by saying thank you very much for this great initiative. Thank you very much for public enterprise to invite the Department of Transport, this portfolio committee in particular, to such a meeting and opportunity. We've been asking for combined meetings for a long time already, and we're glad that this is happening. But Chair people, Magatwa and Zwane, we definitely need a follow-up. I want to suggest and recommend and propose that we have a combined in-person political discussion. It is really necessary, in my view, that we seriously consider issues relating to the legislative environment, the Legal Succession Act, but also the devolution of passenger rail to cities. I propose that we consider having such a meeting rather sooner than later. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hunsinga. I can see hands growing. I don't know what is the cause of that. I'll have hands raised all at once so that I can be able to measure my time, but it is what it is. Members choose to raise hands as they are ready. Let me take Honorable Judith, followed by Comrade Thokozile Mali, and I think those are the two hands I would want to close with. If there's no any other hand that is still...
Chair?
Umpile.
Yes. I thought we'll do what we normally do. I know that is a joint committee, but what we normally do is just to go through the names, all of us, so you don't have to raise our hands. I would have missed this one because I did not raise my hand, but I do want to ask a few questions.
You must raise your hand, Honorable Umpile, so that I will include you as the last hand. But could we please raise our hands as, Honorable Judy, the floor is yours.
All right. So good morning, Chairperson, Mr. Zwane Mangete. And let me say humble apologies to you because, yes, one did not raise the hand. And I think this is the proper one so that you don't go through a tedious approach of calling people that did not raise hands and the next thing they don't say anything. So thank you so much. Apologies for raising the hand late. Chair, let me welcome the presentation and great of you MPs for transport and public enterprises. Look, there is a something that I did not hear around economic recovery plan that the president would have pronounced on. And from both Net and BRASA, I would have wanted to hear exactly why are they focus areas and issues that really they are going to look into and ensure that they respond to what the president would have responded to. I think for me, as part of giving a focus response and areas of what they are looking into besides dealing with operational issues, which are very important. One, the SOE Council, there is work that is happening there. And Transnet in this council, one knows and is informed that it has identified opportunities for private sector participation. And the acting DG of Transnet did mention that, of PRASA, did mention the matter of private sector participation and so forth. So, but I want to know, so far as Transnet, the council and they identified opportunities for private sector participation in the ports and rail supply chains. And I really want to understand how this and where are these opportunities located. If you can mention these opportunities that you're speaking about, so that we understand that how do you development agenda. And I think for me, it's very important as government that we do so. Now, Speaker, including that, there is, one can predict really that through these issues that there is an impact that the strategy for instance, the new strategy will drive volume growth through private sector participation. And, it's often said that private sector is coming ahead. The acting DG saying that private sector has been coming to them and approaching them and trying to say, let's work together. But I really want to understand that this partnership forged between be it Transnet and the private sector, how will it increase the volume of growth in the corridors linked with strategic commodities, including coal, iron ore, manganese and chrome? If you can just illustrate that if they are there, because you find this within your 40% of the GDP, South Africa GDP, that's something that we really need. But I would really want to understand that the strategy being closely intertwined with the shift of bulk freight from road to rail, the agenda that we have of the road to rail, really, I want to understand how many specifically government has shifted how many times really up to now insofar as the issue of road to rail between, you can give us that between 2016, 2022 now, or maybe from 2019 to 2022, really what are the successes and what is it that freight, the freight that you've moved insofar the road to rail on this issue? Now, I have two matters. The matter of Naledi in Soweto, Ralaway has been fixed. I need to understand when is it going to be done by BRASA and when are you going to finish it? But what is the maintenance plan around it? I heard your big plans and ensuring, and I think you're coming up with good plans currently, but as things that are happening now, you are rebuilding the infrastructure. But I want to know, as you are doing it, what are the lessons that you've learned and what are the things that you put in place to ensure this don't happen again, especially the stealing, the vandalism? What are the areas that you've done to strengthen it? And I'm making a case, an example, in Soweto and Naledi, there is that construction. Secondly, there is a poisons informal settlement in Johannesburg that I will keep on raising because it's part of my parliamentary constituency office and where I'm deployed in. And these are issues that we're dealing with and I'm not getting a response. And that is really unfair. I really want to get a response around the poisons informal settlement where foreign nationals have taken over them. They're living in the railway. the erected informal settlement, what are you going to do to ensure that you take over your infrastructure, and when are you going to build that railway in Boise to ensure there is trains? Our people are suffering, cost of living is very high, trains are a source of transportation for them to go to work, and it's very much cheaper. I see your face, that means I must stop. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Judith. I was wondering if the video was a live video or a picture, but it's okay. We have seen you. Thank you very much for the input.
No, it's very much live. Hello. It's very live. We're not used to it. In public enterprise, we don't see shows of video, but it's live.
Okay. Oh, there you are, because you, it means it was a network problem. Thank you very much. Honorable Thokozile Malinga or Mali, something like that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Pardon me for not opening my video. My network is not very much stable. Greetings to both the Chairpersons, members of the board, public enterprise and transport. Apologies, Chair. I was in another meeting but logged in on this one, hence my hand is raised later. Chairperson, let me welcome the presentation as given to us this morning. But Chairperson, I am interested on the slide where they talk about market and organization structures. Does that mean, because it says they are going to have three things, I don't know where it's entities, are you unbundling our rail infrastructure? Also, Chair, I was able to listen to Paul McDonald when he was talking about the dilapidated houses around our rail lines. I want to concur with him because those lines or those houses, I think they were built by Transnet, if I'm correct, or by Spornet at the time. They are dilapidated and there are people who are inhabitants of those houses, and they give municipalities a challenge in terms of their tax and rates because they can't pay for tax and rates, which burdens municipalities with debts because those houses do not belong to the people who stay in them. What is the intention of Transnet to either sell those houses or give those houses out to the people who are occupying them? Chairperson, also on the funding slide, I think it's bullet one. If I could just get more clarity on the issue where operators have to find their own rolling stock, who will do the maintenance of the rail system then, or of the rail line? Lastly, Chairperson, I think on the slide whereby on urban guided transit, which is also bullet one, where municipalities should consider development of other light rail systems. Chairperson, in my area, I'm from Lekwastanet in Mpumalanga. We used to have sasibiza ngamagutsi angazinomoya yazi leyo language babo uzwana where we will see itimela moving coal from one area to another area, and that has become I can see you're smiling, has become ghost towns. I think if they can go back to doing that, it will assist in not leaving towns where there are stations not to be ghost town. I'm talking about your Grayling-Stad, which is now called Ntorwane, your Standerton, and also to alleviate the pressure of our roads given by coal trucks on our roads. When they transport coal to neighboring mines with this line. I think this line goes from, I think it's Sugepagi, Iofiga, a Newcastle station, if I'm correct, Chair. And given the mines that are around this line, it will really, really assist the idea of moving goods from road to save our roads to rail lines. Have they ever thought about that? Chairperson, lastly, on the issue of cable theft, I'm not sure. I got in when one presenter also was saying sometimes it's an internal job. Don't you have security guards? If it's internal jobs, how many people have been arrested and prosecuted for stealing or depleting our rail lines? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Malinga. Let me take the last hand of Honorable Umphile Maudwe. Over to you, ma'am.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, it doesn't come as a surprise that we only received this presentation this morning.
Your video, please, ma'am.
My network is very bad. You know where I am. So I'm saying it doesn't come as a surprise that you received this presentation early this morning. It's such things that doesn't surprise us, because these people that are presenting here or that presented here, they want to sell our state-owned entities. We've got the gentleman who was presenting first, talking about private participation. We listened to the CEO of Transnet talking about private participation. None of them, being acting on behalf of the state, none of them ever said, these are the volumes we are missing. If the state can come and assist us with 1, 2, 3, we'll be able to close this gap so that we don't share our bread with private sector. Now, how do you have heads of entities who come and advocate for private, yet they are should be acting on behalf of the state-owned entities? We've never heard the CEO of Transnet telling us what used to be the order book of Transnet versus Prasa. Something that when Prasa reduced the order book, we found factories closing, Bloemfontein factory, Cochin factory closing, and Salt River scaling down, Devon scaling down, Kudusport scaling down. None of that she's ever mentioned. She didn't even mention TE for that matter. She only mentioned TFR because she thinks in her mind that she's dealing with freight when she is in a portfolio committee that has got an entity that deals with passengers. That is the mismatch that we have. So I want to know from Prasa, from Transnet, what's your order book? How much of work is Prasa giving to you that that used to give to you, that is given to you today? And how much of that work has been taken to private sector? Because that's where we should start. That's where government should be pushing for industrialization, not government coming with mouthpieces that advocate for privatization. The whole presentation today is very clear that we are heading towards privatization of Prasa. We are heading towards privatization of Transnet. And we must not be fooled, we must not be lied to anymore. This is what the head of entities came to tell us today in this portfolio committee meeting. Thank you.
Honorable Umphile Maudwe, thank you. Let me go back in that order. Department of Transport, Department of Public Enterprise, Transnet, Mayor Poshia Devi, and Babu Mpilo, being conscious of time, of course, could we quickly respond to questions of clarity and give more information if we have? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'll talk to some of the questions, Chair, and then hand over to both Prasa and Transnet. Just basically, Chair, to apologize to the honorable members in terms of the presentation distribution. We did earlier send a presentation, and I think when we changed and added this, I think that's what caused that. We really apologize, Chair. And to say, Chair, the discussion and the responses that we have done in terms of presenting today was based on the invitation. The focus really was more on the challenges and how do we then implement road to rail. So some of the issues that might have been raised in the meeting, Chair, might be have been probably not be part of that scope, but when we continue to engage, we will deal with that. Just starting with the issues raised by Honorable Kachalia, the rail policy, Chair, which is the white paper that has not been there, that has been approved by cabinet, it is a response to some of the challenges that are faced by rail. And key to that, like I said in the policy trust, is that it's one, investment, and secondly, the issue of reforms in how we deal with those particular issues. And one key issue, Chair, that cuts across by honorable members is the issue of security and cable theft. And it will be very important to then report in this meeting that there is a product, besides the policy pronouncement that we have put to have a level of coordination and government intervention, there is a effort at the government level of intervention, and including the CIF of the JCPS, which is the government security cluster, and how do we then work in together with the DTIC to be able to deal with this matter. So there is work happening with regard to that. And to really put it to the table, Chair, that there is never in any policy government to then say, we are really want to privatize the rail sector. There's no that kind of a policy position on the table now or not being implemented. A government is therefore responding to the request of saying, if there are other partners who want to work with you, how do you then create that enabling environment by still making government to be an authority? And I said in my presentation that key, especially in terms of infrastructure, is the strategic asset that government must continuously own and become an authority in terms of that particular development. And whether it's paid in partnership by private sector in one way or another, but there is methods including build, operate and transfer to be able to deal with those things to ensure that government is able to continuously do that. There is an issue, Chair, that has been raised about the fragmentation of Transnet and PRASA. We know there was a policy decision taken that separated freight from passenger, and I think the implementation that we are doing is in that regard. We will raise an issue of Transnet and PRASA coming together to our political principal Chair, and obviously for consideration and further engagement in that regard. On the issues that are raised by Honorable Malinga with regard to how do we allow the rolling stock private operators to bring a rolling stock, and who does the maintenance? I mean, this is done in terms of the policy mandate I've put there in terms of the third party access regime. We see this as another funding stream to be able, because government was funding both majority in terms of the rolling stock and second in terms of infrastructure, and private sector said they are willing to bring that investment to do that. I mean, some of this, including if government entities have capacity, they'll be able to still provide rolling stock to any other party, including the new entrants who wants to come back into the market. And I think that's the kind of a new paradigm shift in terms of the maturity of the railway sector and how we then implement them. I don't know whether it's fortunate or unfortunate is that the state entities in terms of government implementing entities then get that direction in terms of what then become pronounced. And we think that is something that will be able to unlock some of the challenges that we have. In terms of urban guided transit, the line that you have mentioned, Honorable Malinga, in terms of coming to how do we then revive the rural economies and not make a ghost town. The presentation we've made one on the branch line, just to talk to those rural towns and see how do we then serve the industries such as timber and agriculture in that particular element. But on the line you have referred, I mean, it is in the plans of PRASA. They can talk to that in terms of the revival of the long-distance passenger trains. And we are already engaging with the communities in that area, Standard and Falcrest, as far as the issues that have come up in terms of the engagement that we then have. I then hand over to PRASA to deal with the implementation issues, Chair, and the group CEO of Transnet.
Magaipe, thank you very much, Acting DG. Thank you. PRASA, you want to go first, maybe, so that we end with the Transnet.
Thank you, Chair. Quickly, I think I'll start from the bottom up. What are the lessons learned in as far as protection of assets is concerned? In essence, where there is no traffic, you open up a gap for vandalists and thieves and syndicates to do as they wish with our infrastructure. And we've seen that with rail, we've seen that with electrical components, we've seen that with the stations as well. So the more traffic we run in the corridors, the more we actually cover and stop them from ripping out our infrastructure. Further to that, we've also identified hotspots in our network across the board nationally. So in those hotspots, there are solutions that we're looking at, and one of those was the walling component, which initially when we started, we were talking about Mabopane and Central Line in particular because they were the biggest hit. So we are walling and fencing those components. We are walling and fencing the critical infrastructure like your relay rooms, your substations, your critical buildings as well. 4 meter walls high, they're all concrete with technology on top of that. We're also looking at the control rooms. So we've introduced control rooms, and this is to allow us to use technology as a force multiplier, and we're also introducing K9. So we've learned out of this over this time, and we're coming up with solutions to deal with that. Honorable Judith, around the presidential economic recovery, just to mention a few, Chair, our general overall contract, and I think there was reference on whether we still doing this with Transnet or not, but where we are on that contract is 7.5 billion committed onto that that's gonna go into the economy in the MTSF. We also have got the normal coach maintenance, which is around half a billion over time. It's going straight into the industry as well, meant for recovering the industry as well, huge impact. The recovery of infrastructure on its own currently, without KZN after the floods, it's around 2.3 billion. So there is that that's going back into the economic recovery, and we've presented that accordingly to that committee. Givela on its own, a huge job creation component in there with a potential. We continue to monitor that, and just maybe to update the committee and honorable members on that one. Just lately, an international company, Nobremse, which provides and supplied door components, has localized 97% of that supply in the country. So that is the impact we're talking about from an economic recovery, and we'll continue to monitor that going forward. Honorable Hansinger, yes, we run just below 2,300 kilometers of rail, but we are, as it is, we're focusing on a yearly basis on the specific corridors. And as I said, we started with the 10 priority corridors because this is where the majority of our passengers come from. So your Mabopane to Naledi becomes a critical component. In KZN, you've got Kwamashu to Umlazi, which becomes a critical component. In Western Cape, you've got your Central Line. We've got, out of the stations you mentioned, we've got 115 that we've earmarked for recovery and revitalization. And over the MTF, it's around 1.7 billion that we've allocated into that, including the upgrades for bigger stations in there. Honorable McDonald, you spoke about railway police. I speak under correction, but I'll get those numbers correct. We've got dedicated around 5,000 police, which are codenamed railway police at the moment, dedicated into the railway as we speak. Yes, it doesn't come out as a unit like it used to be, but we've got dedicated police that we work with in that space. How many more security guards? I want to deal with that confusion, Chair. As I said earlier on, at peak, we had around 10,000 boots on the ground. When we canceled the contracts, we depleted that 2,000. We had to go and do insourcing for 3,100. So that takes us to just above 5,000 boots on the ground of the insourced force. But we're complementing that with the outsourced at the moment. And where we are through third-party contracts, we've added another 1,600 into the picture through our collaboration with AXA. Honorable Kachalia, cable and theft, yes, it needs to be addressed. And that's why we introduced the integrated security plan. And as I said, it's starting to bear fruit where we've introduced it in Mabopane with its component and its phases. One thing that we've highlighted is that maybe it's time we start highlighting that rail and rail components needs to be considered for national key points so that it can get the attention that it deserves. So Chair, let me leave it there. I don't know what else I may have missed on my side, but I would leave it there, Chair, for the sake of time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Below, somebody's calling me. Is it the Honorable Judith Nemazinga?
Yes, Nemazinga. Thank you so much. Mr. What his name is just responded now, and I took it was responding on issues of PRASA. And he started bottom-up responding. There's two things that I asked that he didn't respond to. The poisons informal settlement. And I don't think the two for colleagues to really not or ignore and don't respond to. I need a response, Comrade Zwane, around mm-hmm. the poisons informal settlement and when is that going to be restored, when is really going to take place, and when are the laws. Number two, I asked about a lady, a runaway, what's happening. How are they going to deal with me as is happening right now? But the voice is for an answer.
Thank you very much, Honorable Judith. Baumpilo, can you just conclude on those two?
I've got my hand up, sorry.
Yes, Honorable McDonald.
Apologies, Chairperson. I didn't want to interlude in while you were speaking. My humble apologies, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question, I think my question wasn't understood. We have done oversight on PRASA. They promised to insource 3,000 security guards. When we did the oversight, it was only 873. I asked him if he can give me the exact figure of people that are now currently insourced, because there are no people at the stations, Jefferson. And I wanted that exact figure. And I'm being given the same media briefing that we were given that time. I don't want the media briefing, Jefferson. I want the exact numbers.
Okay,
let me allow you to ready yourself for the Naledi and poison and this one. Let me take PRASA for now so that you organize yourself proper. I can see everyone wants you saying something, so let me allow you that space, if you understand what I'm saying. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Ma'am Portia, are you still with us? Transnet. Meposhia Debbie,
CEO of Transnet.
Good morning, Chair. Can you hear me?
Now, you are loud and clear, and we can see you also. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much for the question. So I'll start with the first set of questions. The Honourable Kachalia, most of it was really statements that we would generally agree with. However, the point that he raises, which is around the issue of the cost of theft, who has to bear it, and the cost of the replacement of cables, both the copper cable as well as the ancillary equipment, is a very real one. Because it can't be a cost that Transnet should continue to bear, because it places us as a cost disadvantage to the very private sector which is coming into the system. And to be very frank, it's a cost that should be dealt with at a national level, because criminality is a problem for all of us. The third point, I mean, we've been looking at, we need to work a little bit closer with PRASA on how they're dealing with security. Because the point that PRASA makes is something that we can absolutely agree to, is that when you have boots on the ground, you definitely see an improvement in the incidence of theft. Now, looking at their ratios of boots to kilometers that they have responsibility, as Transnet, we definitely would not be able to afford to have a 60,000 plus force additional to our staff. So it is crucial that there's a broader discussion around how we make sure that railway police are brought back to ensure that there's protection of the infrastructure. So the issue of funding of the replacement of cable is a really big problem that we have. We would like to have addressed as well, because that's half a billion of our costs that we are currently incurring. Honourable MacDonald raises the issue that we can't say that rail is affordable, reliable, safe and competitive. We completely agree on that, especially on the affordability, but we've already indicated the fact that in our case, unlike in other jurisdictions, you would have the state funding the infrastructure costs. And in our case, it has to come off our balance sheet. And unfortunately, we borrow money in the capital markets, and there's a cost to that as a strategy. And that's why we were indicating that really what is truly progressive about the national rail policy, on condition that there's a location of budget that attaches to it on the other side, the idea that government will, for the first time since 1986, because it's indeed 1986 where the decision was taken, that there would be sweating of rail assets and government would deregulate roads, that there might finally be real money being put into infrastructure on the rail side. We think that's a really important move forward. Now, we would agree with you around the declaration of rail track as a national key point, because it helps with its protection. But I think it's also important that national key point legislation, or the legislation that's in the process of being developed, which replaces this, increases the cost of security. And so therefore, we would like to see a little bit more support going into that. The issue that Honourable MacDonald raises around, for example, firstly, on the pipeline, the pipeline is definitely, and this we are more than happy to prove, it's 55% on average cheaper than road. Now, we will be interested to see anyone who's paying more than us, because we would then argue that those people are moving stolen products, and we'd really like to know them, definitely, for sure. On the grain side, absolutely true that in terms of the tariff, when we look at it in terms of small parcel sizes, we are more expensive. However, we subsidize the sector because the problem is, it's a point that we've been making all along, right, is that in agriculture, as in autos, as in manufacturing, the parcel sizes that customers want to use are much smaller than the parcel sizes that you would have in the mining, which are bulk commodities. So there's a lot more shunting and movement that is associated with moving grain. However, we remain completely committed, because the advantage that we provide to the sector is that we are able to move much bigger volumes than what would be trucking. So we remain committed to this sector as well. But it's an area that we're working very hard to get to a point where at least our cost recovery moves up significantly from where we are at present, because we definitely subsidize the sector. On the issues raised by Honorable Husband Singer around the blue train, just so we know, so you know, in as far as aligning with the TFR being responsible for freight and PRASA being responsible for passenger, we are going through the process internally in Transnet to look at how we might ensure that there's effective consolidation of passenger in PRASA and freight directly in Transnet. There is a lot more working closely together between ourselves and PRASA in the area of track maintenance, as is indicated. In fact, from a safety perspective, the safety standards that PRASA requires, because they move people, are much higher than ours where we move freight. So it is really important that we continue to collaborate with us directly. The Honourable Member, I hope I've covered most of the questions on that side. The Honourable Nabadzina Dzinga Shabalala asked the question around Boyston South. Start with Boyston. Honourable Member, you were quite right. The station is ours. The property is Transnet property. What we have done, and yes, it is occupied by an informal settlement, which is illegal. And yes, we've tried to, we've talked to the community and tried to, and even with the city, to try and move those people, and they obviously refuse to move. So one of the first steps that we are undertaking is to put in a wall so that there's a separation between the residential area and the station so that the trains would be able to run. We have had discussions with the Department of Human Settlement around whether we would be able to transfer the property from ourselves to the Department of Human Settlement and then ensure that there's a proper development that comes up in that area. Having said that, Honourable Members, the real challenge that we need to deal with is urban planning. This problem of encroachment, and I think we would have seen many pictures on the PRASA side in the department, in the Portfolio Committee on Transport, you would have seen that many times, and even in the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises, we have shown you over time the problem of encroachment right across the system. The cost of walling 20,000 to 30,000 kilometers of track is exorbitant given the amount of money that we need to put into infrastructure. So that cannot be the solution. We need another solution to support. On the question of the 33 million tons that we indicated had moved from road to rail between 2015 to 2021, we can indicate that about 24 million tons was what was made up of the following commodities: coal, chrome, steel, and then we were able to move containers as well as some autos. In the containers, it was fundamentally bulk commodities, manganese and chrome. So fundamentally, 90% of that which we moved was actually minerals products, and only 10% was containers. And that reflects the issue of reliability, speed to port, first of all, but also the issue of sizes of commodities that we move. I think I've covered most of those product questions. I hope I've covered all of the questions, Honourable Member Chabalala. Honourable Member Malinga asked a question about housing. So in as far as the houses, first of all, Transnet remains with the housing, a residential housing portfolio. The priority, and this is way down the line, we've already started. We are selling the houses first and foremost at reasonable rates, and this is negotiated with the unions, to our workers who occupy the houses. At the next level is we will be selling the houses to the current tenants, because the issue both of vacant properties and land, which leads to vagrants, is a thing that we are very mindful, and we are working very closely with the various municipalities to ensure that we do right by what is entirely our property and our problem. On the cable theft, wherever we've been able to arrest, we found our own staff, they've been arrested, and recently there was an announcement made. But I would hazard a guess that most of the theft is not an internal job. The price of copper is way over, it's around 2,000 rand a ton. So frankly, it's lucrative. It's a lucrative business for many people. Honourable Member Mautwe, the issue that you raised, I think we can go back to the slide. I mean, it would really be remiss if we didn't speak back to this issue. Ours is not arguing for private sector participation. The presentation clearly asks for what is limiting the movement of cargo. What are we doing around moving cargo from road to rail? So first of all, there's a slide in there, and really deep apologies for the late submission of the presentation. That was not the intention to hide anything. Is that we indicate that we have a $6 billion shortfall just on today. And as we go forward, this gap continues to grow on the amounts that we require for investment in the track. And yes, we are talking to government about how track is funded, because I agree with you entirely, as I also indicated later in my presentation, that the problem with using the private sector funding to invest in infrastructure leads to the twin problems of excluding emerging miners in the case of mining, or emerging customers on the one hand, because invariably, if I give you my money, I'm going to want you to do a deal with me. Either you give me a good price, and whenever there's been good prices, it leads us to challenges with the Competition Commission, where the view is that our pricing is uncompetitive. Or I'm going to say to you, I'm willing to give you this money if you're going to sign a long-term contract with me, which leads to the exclusion of the emerging miners, a big problem that we are dealing with as Transnet. Agree with you 1,000% that on some of these issues, we definitely need proper discussion around how we ensure that pricing, funding for infrastructure does not lead to the exclusion of small businesses, emerging miners, and black businesses in the system. And I think we've really tried to be absolutely clear on that. I agree with you entirely on PE. Transnet Engineering is the biggest engineering capacity that we have in this country. Bar none, it's the biggest engineering capacity that we have in this company, in this country. If we do not find a way to feed competitive volumes through TE, we will lead to a destruction of capacity. So we are talking to PRASA around the coaches business. But then also, let's not ignore the fact that there are private companies that had been set up to provide support, and many of them owned by black people, by the way, to provide support on the manufacturing side. So what we are trying to do is, and in working with the DTIC, to figure out what is a viable and competitive supply chain for componentry in South Africa that would be able to also export out of South Africa, while ensuring that where we have core skills directly at the state, that we maintain this capability. Honorable Chair, I think we have answered, we've answered all of the questions that have been raised. Safe to say is that we are really working hard, both on the one hand, to ensure that the introduction of private sector participation is in no way damaging to Transnet or leads to a shrinkage of Transnet, but that we leverage the opportunity to grow the company going forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mepoishi. Babumbi.
Mange.
I think Mama Uposhia will spend with poisons as part of Transnet. Do you want to say something quickly on Naledi and the question posed by Honorable McDonald?
Yeah, I'll do that quickly, Chair. The Naledi rail or corridor is scheduled to be recovered by August 2022. So we shut it down as part of the four, as I highlighted. It's currently sitting in the war room, which is focusing on the delivery of the components and the pillars to recover the corridors. So scheduled for August 2022 for recovery. Number of security bodies as we speak, or boots on the ground, on the dot, 4,922. Of the 3,100 that we brought in on top of what we had, 24 already are not in the system through COVID. Others have passed on, and others through national attrition. So we've lost a few of members from the 3,100. We've lost a few of our members from the base 2,000 that we have, and that leads to the 4,922 on the dot as we sit, Chair.
Thank you very much. I can see you are precise to the point. Honorable members,
this brings us to the end of today's joint meeting. We have heard appreciation of such endeavors. I want to say to the officials of the public enterprise, well done. We are looking forward in organizing more meetings like this. May Judith Nematzinga and Honorable McDonald and everybody that was involved in organizing this, kudos to all of you. Otherwise, to the Department of Transport, officials of both portfolio committees and honorable members, this was not a fight. These were engagements in order to try and find the best solutions for our people. Lives to change for the better. And I think we will take it from here and see how to move forward in changing what needs to be changed. With those few words, because I'm sure they are few words, this meeting has seen its end. Until we meet again, thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Long live the church.
The people must come back to me. Always. And Sosia, you must take my message, please.